the Lord our God, as he has commanded us. That will be our righteousness. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Everton. I'm going to ask you a very personal question now. Brace yourselves. How many of you can ride a bicycle? Oh, good number. Good number. Well done. Now, I'm not going to make you prove it, so relax a little bit. But I'd love you, if you could, turn to someone you're sitting next to and have a little answer to a strange question. Why did you learn? Why did you learn to ride a bicycle, if you can? And secondly, how did you learn? Let's see how that goes. Okay, I'm going to call you back to the room because some of you are talking about your lunch now, so get back on track. Don't worry, we're not going to have a plenary and all feedback or anything. But a little bit of my story. I grew up on a farm on Guernsey, and so we had a big yard, and I saw my sister cycling. She's my big sister, 3 years older. And I thought, that looks fun. And then I sort of somehow picked it up, but I do remember my dad helping me. Can I ask you, could you raise your hand if you were taught to ride a bicycle by a close family member? Oh, that's the correct response. Thank you. I was hoping. Now, there may be some of you who didn't, a bit like swimming. Not all parents can swim, so not all can pass it on. I remember when I was at school going, they had cycling proficiency. I thought, is that something I want on my CV? I'm not sure. But my dad was completely not mechanically minded, and I had a tricycle like this with stabilizers. And I was so fed up, I was nagging him, and I was, I guess, about 4 or 5. I said, please take the stabilizers off. I look like a kid. And in fact, I started sort of making him more anxious because I thought, well, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to see if I can balance on two wheels, and I'd sort of angle it over. And that's, I think, how I got into sort of biking, really. I love sort of banking it over. Anyway, I do love cycling. It's how I learned to pray as well. And actually, if you've seen me on a motorbike, you'll know why I pray a lot as well. But our family, every morning, we would pray together. And just as I saw my sister and thought, oh, that looks easy, I just heard everyone around our family praying. And I thought, well, that's pretty easy. My mum, bless her, and some of you might relate to this, had a book of, you know, a first tooth or first fingernail clipping and that sort of stuff, and stuck it in. And she wrote in my first prayer, and I was 2 years old, and it was just, you know, I don't remember it, but she recorded it because we were praying together, and so I just prayed because that's what we do. That's what our family does. I remember the day I learned to do my shoelaces. It's a lost art with Velcro, isn't it? But I remember my dad was out at work, and my mum taught me, and in came my dad, and ta-da, my shoelaces are undone, but look at this. He was so not impressed. I carry a wound, actually, of his disappointment on my life for that. The point is, though, most life skills and values are passed on within families. Sometimes we're trying to learn things, but more often it just sort of happens. That's why I asked Sophie, it just sort of happened. Although you did have one exceedingly exciting adventure, so that was nice to hear about. Life skills passed on in families. Why do we learn faith? Well, I thought it looks fun and it's useful. That's why I picked up a bicycle. It's fun. But it's also useful. It increases what you can do. And I think having a faith in God that's alive is fun and useful. What Paul noticed about, he had a friend, a younger church leader, timid Timothy. And what he says, but I remember what you're like. I'm reminded of your sincere faith. It's the real deal, which first lived in your granny, Lois, and in your mum, Eunice, and now I'm persuaded now lives in you also. I'm quite sure it's the same stuff. It seems to have gone down the DNA, but actually it wasn't DNA. It was the environment that they created, Lois to Eunice to Tim. And even though Timothy was a bit of a fearful character at times, it was a real faith that he was growing in, and Paul was encouraged. So a lot of things in life are not taught, they're caught. We won't take time now, but perhaps you could think of other things you caught without even knowing it, almost like osmosis from your family, some of the values and traditions. In our house, I've just thought of it, how my mum would always stand to when the Queen's speech was on for the national anthem. And to this day, I can't not do that. I've got to stand. I'm going to be gutted when she dies. I think she's an amazing person. I wouldn't feel right not standing for her. And now my boys, who are probably slightly more on the Republican side, they all do it too. And when they have families, I know they're going to do it, even though it may not be the Queen. But this stuff runs down our family. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. But that's how it seems to go. So if we want our children to know, how do you form loving relationships? They probably need to see it. They need to experience love in the home. And giving them a book at 18 and then saying, off you go, this is probably not going to work out so well. They need to experience it in order to pass it on, with exceptions. So sometimes we do need external help because we've not had a good experience, and that's great as well. It's the same with discipleship. Getting to know Jesus is easier when there's others modeling it to us in a good way. Sometimes I hear people saying they want their children to decide for themselves. I think, great. Of course, we want them to make that choice explicitly. But then those parents sometimes give their children a ruthless diet of no God, no prayer, never reading the Bible, or experiencing a living faith, but they're subjected to 30 hours a week in front of a screen, which is not neutral. And I'm thinking, in what sense, in what universe is this a free choice? It's a ludicrous scenario. And so many young people and children think they want to reject God when they've had no experience of the true God. They often reject the God they don't believe in because they've never met the God who believes in them, the encounter with God. What did Jesus do to pass on faith to his disciples? This is an early photo. He appointed 12 that they might be with him and that he might send them out. But that's the order. They're with him. They're experiencing it. And then they have got something to pass on and to share. Jesus was once asked, what's the most important commandment? And without hesitating, he quoted Deuteronomy, something not everyone can do today. But every Jewish child could, if they're raised in faith, because this is the very heart of the Jewish faith, of the expression of God, of all the doctrines anywhere. Shema Yisrael, hear, O Israel. And every Jewish child would be able to pray this. And they take it very seriously. If you go to a Jewish home, you may see the mezuzah on the doorpost, a little sort of a scroll in maybe a piece of porcelain or metal. And when a Jewish person prays, they often pray, so they've got the letter Shin, the first letter of Shema Yisrael, and they're praying, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and it's verses 4-7. That's what they've got in the little scroll. It's really, really interesting. Jesus is clear this matters most. This is the most important. That was the case 4,000 years ago with Moses. 2,000 years ago, Jesus agrees. This is what's most important. But they were clear, the Jews knew, their faith could survive without a temple. It wouldn't survive if it wasn't in the home. And so Christians who are trying to outsource passing on faith, no matter how brilliant the children or youth work, it will not be effective. I mean, if we were brilliant, which on a good day we can be, it's 1 hour out of 168 per week. And so I say to parents who are bringing their children for baptism, I hope you'll get plugged in, because we do offer some fantastic resources. Really brilliant. I'm so thrilled with the team here. But if it had to be a trade-off, don't come, but pray every day with your children. Every day, and then your kids will pick it up. By osmosis, they will just know, I can do this. It's fun and it's useful. I can do it. So I'm going to click on verse 7. Impress them on your children. I mean, so often today, is there some kind of pretense that there's a morally neutral place you could be? Let the children decide. How can they decide? But we're not in a morally neutral place. There's a huge diet of rubbish being pumped out. So we do have an obligation. Impress them. I was brainwashed as a child, and as an adult, I still need my brain washed regularly, because it gets dirty otherwise. Impress them, stamp it into your children, because it's good stuff, it's for blessing. Talk about them, the things of God, when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down and get up. And Sue and I, that's what we try to do. So when we're lounging around, rather than just clicking on Netflix, we might say, I read this weird verse in the Bible. I have no idea what it means. What do you think? We'll have a chat about it. And it's not that we're pretending life's easier or better than it is. We might say, I thought I was doing the right thing, but this is going rubbish at the moment, and I've no idea what God's up to. What do you think? My children are all in ministry, but I've never hidden from them times when I've been really furious or frustrated or disappointed with God, because that's what life is like on a fairly regular basis. So I know they know what they're getting into. But we share, we talk about it. And then walking along the road, I mean, with my sons, that was great. Well, I'd say one of them, you can skip bedtime, we're going to go out for a walk. And they thought, oh, this is good. But we talk about the things of God. And in the darkness, they would share some of their lives and fears and how life, sharing life with God. And driving, I've had some amazing conversations with my family members, because we were both concentrating on the road. And actually, it takes some of the pressure off. You're not eyeballing each other, and we can share truthfully. When you lie down, when it's night time, bedtime, having a bit of a chat. And first thing in the morning, I learned as a value from my parents, and my parents were far from perfect, as I told them quite regularly. But in the middle of our busy, chaotic lives, I learned as a value, no matter how busy or disappointed with God we were, or furious with each other, we would still pray. So we just did it. So I sometimes hear Christians say that they pray when they really feel like it. I think I would never pray on that basis. I mean, I'd say the same, I'd never pay my taxes if I just did it when I felt like it. I'd be cut off from my energy supply if it was based on how I felt. It's got to be a little bit more rigorous than that I've made a choice to do it. So, Deuteronomy 6:20, a little bit later on in the narrative, when your son asks you, and don't kids ask questions at the most awkward moment, but you either respond or you don't. When your son asks you, oh, what's the meaning? And he's probably looking a bit tired. What's the meaning of the stipulation? Why are we doing this? Tell him. You know, give an answer. Don't bottle out of it as a parent. So two things. First of all, you give an answer. Be ready with an answer. Why are we doing this? And secondly, the answer is in green. We were slaves in Egypt, but he brought us out and brought us in. You tell the story of why we were and how we were saved. So for Jews, they still, 4,000 years later, remember Passover. It's wonderful. It's amazing. It's nothing to do with a temple or even synagogue. It's because they tell the story in their home. For followers of Jesus, we tell the story of Jesus, of his life, his death and resurrection. And just as there's a sort of expectation of almost a dialogue, the question and an answer. So we have that in some of our liturgy, a question and answer. People think, oh, this isn't very realistic. It doesn't have to be realistic. It's a way of remembering. So this morning at the 9:30 service, we gathered around the Lord's table. We took bread and wine. And basically, the Eucharistic prayer is a question and answer of Jesus's CV, what he did in his life and death and resurrection. And we remember, because we remember not by getting the words right, but what Jesus said is, do this to remember me. And if we're going to pass it on to the next generation, that's the process of trying to do it. So answering questions and sharing the story. Now, quite a lot of you here might be thinking, fine, but I'm not a parent. Or, you know, maybe some of you are feeling a bit rubbish, thinking, I never did that. And you're feeling condemned. Please don't hear that. It takes a whole church to raise a child in faith. It's not just on parents or godparents, but the whole church has a role in passing on faith to others. And we can encourage one another in this process. Please don't feel condemned, but engage with it. And I mean, I had so many beautiful older people spoke into my life when I was a young Christian, when I wouldn't have listened to my parents, but I heard it from them. And you can do this. And indeed, we must do it. This is a command that we're called into. And so this sermon is really an introduction to what we're going to be doing over the next 4 months. So brace yourselves. What I want us to do, and I'm excited about it, is trying to work out what are the values that we want to be bothered to pass on. Because like it or not, we are passing stuff on, whether it's neglect or whatever. Why not say, let's choose positive things that we're choosing to pass on? And so this is the first of these things I've ever done. Some people can do them in lots of different colors and different. I couldn't manage it. I was a bit pressed for time by the time I realized what I was wanting to say. These are the values of, I hope, we would all embrace as a church. Kindness, courage, generosity, Sabbath rest, service, sharing with others, celebrations, hospitality, self-control, and protecting the weak. I mean, it's not an exhaustive list, but these are some of the things I think we could get behind. And I can't wait, because I think these are good things to have in our lives. I'll also just say, do look on our church website. I know you can't read this, but I'm just proving we do have a church website. And one of the pages, one of the tabs you could get to, if you haven't seen it before, About, that's who we are, Sunday, you can probably work out what that is. It's actually quite easy to navigate now. The Week, Belong. And under Belong, you'll find home groups, and this is a page on home groups, and assuming you wouldn't be able to read it, let me read this to you, because this is what we feel home groups are for. At St. Francis, we encourage all church members to be part of a home group. There's nothing like gathering together as a church family for corporate worship each week. Here you are. But home groups, or small groups, about 10 to 14 people, play an important role in encouraging discipleship and ensuring members feel supported, giving them the tools to be salt and light where God has placed them in the world, in their families, neighborhoods, and workplaces. At the moment, we've got 14 different groups, home groups across the city, and they meet at different times. Most are in person, some are Zoom, and most meet fortnightly for about an hour and a half or 2 hours. Home groups are a great place to grow in faith and friendship, developing a support system with members of your group by journeying through life together and with God. If you'd like to find out more information about home groups, contact Rory. Oh, look, there he is. He was at the front, he's now at the back. He's moving among us. If you don't know, and please, again, if you know it's not for you, I know some people with, say, some mental health problems just feel, I couldn't go to a home. But many people find home groups really helpful. And Rory will help you find a group where there's nice people. You shouldn't laugh at that. That was meant to be a serious possibility. Where you could share yourself. And over time, we learn to trust each other and share life, just like a family. It's not a surrogate or a replacement family, but a group of people we feel we could trust enough to share life with each other. So if it's not for you, be at peace. But maybe you're not in a group, and actually having a smaller group of people to connect with would be really helpful. So we're going to pick up habits. I hope we're going to pick up some good habits from one another. And this next season is trying to be intentional about that. What am I going to do now? I know. Let's have a thought. As you seem to like the people you're next to, by and large, perhaps you just share very briefly one thing you'd like to get better at and you've seen modeled in another Christian. I'd love to be more peaceful. I'd love to be more, whatever it is. What is the thing that you'd love to grow in through the next 4 months? Maybe that could happen if you partner up, buddy with someone. Let's have a think. Let's have just a minute on that. How would you like to grow as a follower of Jesus in the next season? Okay, can I just make the observation, and I don't mean it facetiously, but you suddenly, most of you, when I invite you to talk to each other, get smiley. When I'm preaching, you don't often smile. Now, maybe that's something I've got to work through, but can I say this is not a bad thing. This is so good that you like being together. I have been in churches where people do not talk truthfully. In a way, the most basic currency, if we're going to have communication, is trust. And for trust to grow, it's very helpful if you even know the person's name. That's why I do encourage you to go onto Church Suite. If you can put your face on it, it increases the pool of people who will remember your name and your face and help build trust. So I hope you do feel this is a place where it's worthy of your trust, that the people around you are safe to be truthful. We don't share everything with everyone. There are appropriate boundaries, but the basic DNA is we're going to trust one another, and in our small groups that will happen too. So I'm glad that you like being together. Let me just lead some prayer.